And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Come on in!
Hey, y'all, and welcome to another episode of No Buffs, a Survivor podcast from the No Dunks Classic Factory, brought to you by Sleeper. I'm your Jeff Probst today, Trey Kirby, and joining me in this tight three, we got No Dunks super producer, JD.
Hello.
And from Crooked Media, anytime he's on the mic, it's money, Jason Concepcion. What's up, buddy?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I called this a tight three, but I kind of think y'all are the numbers one and two here. You've been here for every episode. Who knows what's going on behind our backs? Jason and Jason teaming up seems like an unbeatable match.
It's a tight two with us, with the first name Jason. I'm trying to figure out who's going to make fire against who and who's going to be sitting next to us afterwards.
Well, I would be feeling good about the fire, but Skeets is out in Arizona right now doing a whole bunch of hiking. I know he got a new pair of boots, so it wouldn't surprise me if he comes back knowing how to build a fire with a flint and a giant machete. Shout out to the live tribe joining us here on YouTube. Get your subs on, drop a like, leave us a comment, play the game within the game that is the No Buffs YouTube channel. The numbers are growing. We'd love to see it. If you're listening later on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, like the show, leave us a review, or maybe, just maybe, guilt one of your friends into giving you their phone so that you can follow the podcast again. If you ask enough times, they'll give it up, it seems like. Anyways, we are here to recap episode 4 of season 41 of Survivor, titled They Hate Me 'Cause They Ain't Me. This was a banger of an episode after, kind of a standard episode 3. This one felt like the best episode of the season.
To quote JD, our Survivor JD, it was money. But actual money.
It was actual money. Cash
actual
money.
Right, actual cash money.
Yeah, this was an incredible episode. We're going to break down all of it. If you got any comments for us, tweet them at us at NoDunksInc. Send them to Jason, NETW3RK. You already know that. Or email us, NoDunks at The Athletic. Send us some screen grabs, whatever it is. We pick up action on day 7 at the Ua tribe, the fallout from the Beef Walton vote. RIP to the Beef. We miss you already. And it has sent some shockwaves through the tribe, if I'm being honest. Jeannie, very upset that Shan led the charge to vote out Beef Walton in the previous episode. But then Shan, basically bragging to Jeannie, if I'm being honest, said, Brad didn't tell you about his advantage. You weren't his number one, which JD overhears. Then he's now mad at Shan for guilt tripping him in episode 3 because she was withholding info. JD gets his extra vote back and says, fool me once, shame on me. You won't get a second chance. Spoiler alert, she got a second chance. At this point, Jason, did it even cross your mind that JD would once again give up his extra vote within 45 minutes of this happening?
It didn't. Shan was, she was almost in trouble there when JD called her out, because I think that was a good realization from JD that, oh, hold on a second, maybe some of Shan's reactions to things are not as sincere as they seem. Maybe she is amping up some of her emotional reactions to things, and maybe she's not giving me the most sincere and honest face forward. But then he just got rolled once again. She like Jedi mind tricked him again into giving up his advantage again. It reminded me of one time when I was a kid I got caught out after curfew. My stepdad rode past me on the street at like 1 a.m. as I was riding my bike, and I was like, fuck, I'm caught. And I flipped it into, yeah, but mom, all my friends are able to be out at midnight until midnight, and it's like, I'm the only one, and it's like kind of not fair. I understand that I shouldn't have done that, but like, and then what happened was I got my curfew lifted, and that's what Shan did. She just flipped it. She got caught, and she flipped it on him, and wow. JD, very tough stuff from my guy, JD.
That whole scene, apparently, Jeannie went off. Like, we saw a little tiny sliver of it, but that she was upset, throwing stuff, that whole back and forth, basically everybody yelling at each other. Yeah. And it seemed like, watching it back after reading about that, it was like Shan was at the end of her rope. Like, all right, enough is enough. Listen, you were not his number one, you know? And, sure. At the time, the first, like watching it, I thought, oh, she's finally messed up. I mean, Shan has actually done something wrong here, but it didn't seem to matter. I mean, she's, she got away with it. But yeah, I think that was just literally out of just enough is enough. Pure frustration at that point after a very long day and a very long night. But yeah.
I mean, it was tenuous for Shan. It felt like, because I mean, you're looking at the numbers, you're like, there's four people there. Shan has JD mad at her and also Jeannie mad at her. And we know the extra vote is there. We see JD get it back. He's never going to lose that again. He's never going to walk back from the ocean with a hanging out of his pants. This is going to stay with him forever. They got Shan in the crosshairs. They could take Ricard down. Take your pick. The perfect team up. This is exactly what you need.
This is exactly what I was worried about with younger players. This often happens. You know, I was reminded of, JD specifically said, I want to evolve the game. I don't want to make the mistakes that players have made in the past. I think, Eric immediately came to mind, a victim of the Black Widows Brigade. And while this wasn't in the same class, it certainly was in the same genre in that you have a younger player who just gets bamboozled and utterly charmed into being ejected from the game. And it was, the thing is, JD never had anyone else that he was playing with. There were moves there that he could have made. Jeannie's right there, like, let's flip the game. But he seemed, whether he was aware of it or not, so dead set on working with Shan that he couldn't extricate himself from the trap.
Yeah, and to me, it seems like she must, as we've said a few times so far this season, like, she just must be so good at building these relationships with people that everybody thinks that's my number one, right? Like, they think right there, if Shan is going to the final two, it's me going with her, because everybody reveals secrets to her. And JD, as we see, just can't stop giving her his advantage. He can't. He's physically incapable of it. Oh, that was in the first 10 minutes. That was crazy.
Yeah, and it's legit fascinating to me that Shan's name has not come up as somebody to vote for. Like, that, at this point, it's insane. And in fact, there's been a lot of talk of, and I've seen this on social media and I've seen it on the actual show, that Ricard somehow is pulling all the strings, and we got to get Ricardo because he's the one that's actually the mastermind behind all this. But I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have not seen that on the show anyways. Like, there's been no, other than just his calm demeanor. I mean, the guy's dreamy for sure. Like, I love looking at him, and I love, like, he seems like a very charismatic dude, and seems to be like the picture of calm, cool, collected, but it's always Shan that seems to be telling him what they're doing. That's the way the edit is coming across anyway. But that it's just astounding to me that no one has said, let's get rid of Shan because she is the biggest threat in this tribe.
At some point, Ricard needs to realize that he needs to flip on her. Now, that will happen at some, it's either she will turn on him or Ricard will realize, he'll get that spidey tingle and he'll be like, okay, we need to do this. But that will be fascinating to see when it happens, because I'm not sure Ricard has really laid the groundwork for a post Shan's existence here on the island. What happens then? That's coming, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's obviously still mad about Genie writing his name down in episode one, right? Like, give it up, buddy. I would hate to see my name, but come on. I mean, like, she has to vote for somebody. She can't just put nobody.
Don't forget that it's been 4 weeks for us, but it's been 8 days for them, right? Yeah, so everything is so fresh, and it's so easy to forget, like, how fresh things are, you know? But I agree. Like, he has brought it up in two subsequent tribal councils, so... Yeah, let it go, Ricard. Let it go.
They definitely seem like they're headed for some sort of a confrontation eventually. Jade, or Ricard and Shan, like, they seem to be... I was thinking maybe they were kind of on equal footing, one and two so far, but I mean, after watching this episode, Shan is in the clear lead, at least on that tribe. But we got our first reward challenge of the season. Reward challenges are back! And for the first time since the opening episode... Heather steps into a challenge, and this is a tough challenge, particularly for Heather. What you gotta do, you gotta shoot a floater up into a trough, chase it through a high stepping course, and then make a catch. It looked tougher than I really think it was, because it seemed to me everybody was making super clutch catches. You know, like, some of them were like a Randy Moss where you catch it really smoothly over that. Some of them were like Willie Mays, you got to dive out of it and get it. But for Heather, you can see why she didn't set out for most of these. She gets caught on the trough for 5 show minutes, basically. At one point, Jeff Probst yells at Heather, dive! Dive for it.
I gotta tell you,
not
in the toolkit. Dive is not in the toolkit.
Yeah, so this is for reward. Eventually, Ua gets the reward. They pull off the win. They get a visit from an island survival expert. Yasa gets a single fish. But what did you guys think? JD, I'll start with you. What did you think about seeing Heather's first real challenge out there?
I mean, yeah, what an awful debut after so many, sitting out so many challenges. And I, you know, this, Jason, Trey and Skeets are used to my heart of stone. And if I'm in a bad mood, I am absolutely ruthless when it comes to this kind of stuff. But I was not buying this inspirational moment that they
From
were
Danny?
Trying to sell us. I felt horrible for her. I was embarrassed for her. I wanted her to succeed. Then I was sort of moved by the thing that moved me was the way that the tribe rallied around her and was like, "Hey, you know, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay." But I cannot handle the breakdown. Like, it's like, okay, it's a challenge. You know, I know she's 52, but I'm 50 and I'm like, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and first of all, shouts to her for never quitting.
Sure.
Get my Jeff Probst hat on, right? You never quit. We love that. Nothing gets Jeff's pineapples more engorged than someone who does not quit in a challenge. Maybe like a young contestant who says they've been watching Survivor since they were a kid. Maybe that. But 52, it strikes me that maybe she's a little bit of an old 52. Like, Denise, sure, at 50, I have no doubt could crush this.
Yeah.
Like, she was 4 feet plus short on every single, like, catch.
Not even close. She was getting, like halfway through the steps.
Halfway through. Like, Michelle, Douglas Fur in the chat is noting that Michelle also failed at this, but she got there. She just couldn't catch it. Like, I was a little bit shocked at the lack of mobility. I was surprised at it. That was more of a 62 than a 52. That's just me.
Yes.
I felt like you could have got through that. It was shocking. I was shocked.
Yeah. She was never going to get it. And
never.
And she didn't give up. That's true. And I'm glad that she didn't give up. But she hasn't done a single thing yet. I mean, of course you're not going to give up, right? Like,
that's a good point. I guess I can stick this one out since I'll probably sit on the next.
Exactly. I mean, she hasn't done anything yet. And it kind of, but I didn't like Jeff coming on screen and saying, well, if that didn't inspire you, inspire me to what? Like, that's... never go on Survivor? Like,
I know, right?
Are you 55 years old? Do you want to be humiliated on national TV?
Right.
Apply now.
That's right. And then it kind of, she in her confessional afterwards, it was just like, you know, I didn't give up. And I'm like, okay, that's the bare minimum. I suppose the minimum is that you give up, right? But the bare minimum is not to give up. I mean, the Suri Fit challenge, the challenge was over and she didn't give up. I mean, that's
right.
That's different. And then she spun
she
it in her confession.
Right now till this
that's,
day.
that to me should have been the bar. Sit there and run it till you get it, Heather. I want, like, I don't care how long it takes. Don't drop to your knees and quit.
Yeah. In her confessional, she's like, I'm really happy with what I learned, which was apparently never to try that challenge again. You're actually getting a ton of support, I would say, JD, from the live tribe. They are saying you are exactly right. I wasn't buying it either, but you mentioned it. A nice moment at the end for the Luvu tribe.
Yeah.
And in particular, Danny came over, seemed like the greatest teammate of all time coming over. Man. We win together, we lose together. You can't win them all. Just a real tender moment from that guy. He shot up in my books a lot in this episode. What'd you think, Jason?
I thought that was not just a wonderful, heartwarming moment, but also like, that is, if he gets to the end, that's a jury moment. People will remember that. That was like the perfect, Venn diagram of a Survivor move in that it was sincere. It felt authentic to who he is as a person. It was generous above all else. And then great game move if anybody wants to think about it that way. I will say, I think they missed an opportunity considering what happened in the immunity challenge to not run Heather back. Run it back.
Oh, the ultimate redemption story.
That was the mistake considering the tack they were taking with the immunity challenge. Run it back with Heather and say, redemption. She's going to try it. We believe in her and she can do it. That's what they should have done.
Wow, that's a great point, especially considering, I mean, ultimately they tried to tank the thing away. And like looking at the difference between the two challenges, the reward challenge and the immunity challenge, I would make a pitch that the immunity challenge was a little bit easier, right? You would have been able to skip out. You wouldn't have to be the one who's doing like the pushing with your body of the wooden things. Yeah. Just do the swim and throw the ring. Oh, that would have been the perfect way to tank it. I wonder if they're kicking themselves in films the next day. Danny,
yes, absolutely.
Danny breaking down the tape. He's like, oh, bad, come on, guys.
Bad rotation from the coach there.
Tibbs always plays his starters too long.
Yeah.
But anyways, the winner, like I said, Ua, they did an all right job. A couple of things I noticed here. Like I said, you had to throw it up into that trough and catch it. And then you also had to get that ball to land on top of like that ledge or whatever it is, that door frame that doesn't have a door. You got to have a floater if you're playing in Survivor. I saw JD hit one. He hit one with an overhand flip. It looked nice. Jeannie, who shouted out her own basketball prowess in her bio, or in her Survivor bio, hit two of them, if I'm not mistaken.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah,
that was great. You got to get your floaters on because that's the way. The dinkers and the dumpers. So,
and also, shout out to Tiffany because I think she nailed one as well. And she actually did pretty well in that challenge. I think it only took one attempt for her to get through that. So I'm going to formally apologize to Tiffany because I wrote her pretty hard last time. But she seems to have improved over the few days that they've been out there.
Tiffany, when she watched Heather, subconsciously, she just had her chest out. She was like...
yeah, totally, totally.
I got a cross. I got a cross.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's just remember that. She was so relaxed and so confident after that display.
Yeah, so the wins happen, and kind of as you're saying, we cut to Yasa, day 8. They're getting ready to eat their fish, and Evie gives us a previously on Survivor off the top of the dome, basically rattling off what y'all are saying.
That was great.
The Yasa tribe had struggled through the first. They got down to 4, but then they're back. They keep winning, and the producers are cutting in the old footage. I loved this. I would love to see more of this. Jason, you're a fan as well?
I was like, wait, what is this? And it wasn't until they cut to her that I was like, oh, that's so fun. And it was pitch perfect. It got a little Big Brother-y towards the end of it, but it was for most of it, it was pitch perfect. That was so fun. I loved the edit in this episode in the way that they were bringing people in that maybe weren't directly involved in the run of play throughout the episode, at least the way the episode shook out, and getting them their moments in this. And that was a great one for her. I love that.
Yeah, for sure. This show has always been very meta, but this season in particular, it's so incredibly self-aware, flashbacks within flashbacks, taking the Shantham, the Shan's evil theme and running with that, running with the preview that we're talking about now. These are the big swings that I'm enjoying about this season. They seem to have eliminated Jeff talking to us as well. So it seems like they can take a note as well. So I like that.
Yeah, so a delightful visit with the Yasa tribe. Not only do we get Evie's recap of the previous 3 episodes, we get Tiffany bragging on herself like y'all are saying, basically saying, hey, look at how good we're doing since we got rid of Voce.
Yeah.
She's right. She's totally right. They can't stop winning. She says she's food motivated. Shout out to that single fish. If that was your reward, would you be happy? I mean, you're getting a fish. You're getting protein. But it's just one fish for what? There's 4 of them? You get a quarter fillet?
It looked good after they cooked it up with the help of Nathan. Dipping it in the coconut water was like a brilliant. I think I'll use that at home. I will say I was a little bit like, is it out there in the sun for the whole challenge? Or do they put it? Does it go into like an ice chest? Like, is it just there under the leaf? Like, I need to know that. But otherwise, it looked quite delectable when they were eating it.
Yeah, you need a little power.
Just to be my hard-ass character, let's pump the brakes a little. You haven't won anything yet, have you, Yasa? I mean, have they actually come in first in any of these challenges? I don't think so.
Not last is a win, though, right? I mean, it's the Sandra Diaz twine. Sure. Anybody but me.
Okay.
So we then also at Yasa, not only do they get their little fish reward, they also get a nature reward. Turtles migrating to the ocean. An incredible scene. And of course, narrated by Evie, as she was saying, how they became a small tribe, but they kept fighting and fighting and fighting. They make it to the ocean, a little planet Earth. I thought that was great. Then we get to the Yua tribe. They get their reward visit with Fijian Nathan, who cracks coconuts barehanded. He goes fishing.
Can we do the rest of the show on cracking the coconut barehanded? What the fuck?
This guy was incredible. This was like, I think Jeff told him, like, as they were leaving for him to come, they're like, soak it up. See what this guy can do. And I'm thinking, what are they going to learn? Are they going to learn how to actually do this? What of these skills are translatable? Because, like, he scales up a tree, he gets the fruit down, and then he comes down head first, Cirque du Soleil style. That was just incredible stuff from Nathan. But I'm thinking, like, if you're watching this and you're trying to learn from him, like, you're trying to take away just a couple of little things. Jason, what besides, because I agree, like, he mentioned a food preparation. You're not getting recipes in a reward very often. What else would you really want to learn out there?
Well, I think the use of his legs when he's climbing the tree, I think, is the main thing probably that I would have taken away from that. Listen, spearfishing is a lot easier when you have the spear. It's unclear to me that they have the gear to actually go fishing.
Mm.
Which, by the way, as a small aside, very notable that we haven't seen clips of this sort of thing yet this season. The survivors in the water trying to get fish. Yeah. Such a staple of past seasons. Haven't
Good
seen
point.
It. But I think that, you know, use your legs when you climb the tree. That's the simplest one. I don't
sure.
think that there's any world in which you are going to be able to crack a coconut with your bare hands.
That should be instead of building a fire to get into Final Tribal Council, they should give you a coconut and be like, open this. No right. tools.
Right.
I do not think it's happening.
JD, did you learn anything from that segment?
Yeah, well, exactly what you guys just said. You know, it would be like LeBron James trying to teach me how to play basketball. It's just like, here, take the ball, dribble it down the court, and dunk it. You know, and it's not just not happening. I'm not breaking a coconut with my bare hands. I feel like part of me feels like they just sent Nathan in there because I think they do have fishing gear because they won it in a challenge, right? But nobody's fishing, so they're like, we got it. We got all this underwater camera stuff. The guys are just out there. Let's send Nathan in and get shots of him fishing so we can actually get some of these shots. Because nobody was fishing with him. That we didn't see a shot of one of them, you know, following him and learning how to actually spearfish. So
you don't want to take the ball out of LeBron's hands. You don't want to take the spear out of Nathan's hands. Because when he came back, the guy had like 1,000 fish and he looked like he'd been fishing for 10 minutes. He's like, it's simple. You just go when there's low tides. Duh.
Turns out the fish are in the ocean. Have you guys tried that?
Yeah.
Have you tried
just
going
throw
there?
It at him. But that was a you know, fun stuff from both of those tribes. And I think it's interesting because it feels like not much advantage content this week, you know? The whole first half of the episode in episode 3 involved finding advantages, going to Extra Vote Island. In this one, it was all action, baby. It was the challenge. We had the disagreement early in the episode and then, you know, a couple of tribe life kind of visits. Did you enjoy the change of pace from Advantage Festival in episode 3 to straight up Survivor, it felt like to me in episode 4. What'd you think, JD?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I loved it. It was a nice reprieve. We didn't get to hear the butterfly line, unfortunately.
No butterflies.
Unfortunately, but I guess he saw that Beef was gone, so there was no point at that point. I love camp life. I love that stuff. And I feel like, you know, we've talked about it before, but it's the one thing that's been missing from this season. So, it was great that we didn't have to go hiking over a mountain or go to a haunted village in the middle of the night and just actually play the game of Survivor. And, you know, I was happy to see a reward challenge, even if it was for a single fish, you know.
A single fish and some skills you'll never master.
That's right.
What do you think, Jason? Less advantages? Did it pay off for this episode?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, it was a classic Survivor episode in its format and the structure, and it felt great. It felt great to be back into a rewards challenge, the regular cadence of what we know from Survivor, that kind of post big vote, you know, argument at camp. It felt like a classic episode of Survivor. And you could feel, I think, also that production felt comfortable in what they were putting out there. They knew how to mm-hmm. edit this material. They knew how to put this together into something they were comfortable with, something I've done a million times, and it felt like an episode of Survivor. I really loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was great, and I'm feeling like this episode is great and a classic as well. We're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're talking Strat.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Back with no buffs, and for the first time in a long time, we are back with the Blue Tribe, Luvu. We actually get a stop in with Luvu to see what's going on with them. Turns out, they're bored. Just,
that's what it is.
Just super bored over at the Luvu Tribe, never voting anybody off. Sydney can't make a fire. She gets really upset about it. And literally that's all Erica needs to start gunning for Sydney. She immediately goes to Deshaun and says, she is too emotional. We got to get her out of here. See how upset she got trying to build that fire. Of course, Deshaun is close with Sydney, spills the beans to her, and Sydney is not surprised to be targeted because, in her words, she's the threat of threats. She's savvy as hell. She's good looking. She's a physical threat. They hate me because they ain't me. Bars. Jason, is she right? Is Sydney a threat here?
Sydney is a threat to get the Abby edit. Mm. Considering that little display, heavy Abby energy. I'll just say that you hit it, Trey. I think it's just sheer boredom. They are bored. They've been winning. They've been sitting around Nasir throughout names too. They're not going to tribal. There's no reason to throw out names. There's no reason to do anything except stay strong with their numbers, post-merge, and then dominate the game. But they are just sitting around, wondering, should I be making moves? Is my resume going to stack up to everybody else's resume? And Erica really made what was a pure, unforced error right here. You're not going to tribal. There's no reason to do this. If anything, the move is a Sandra move where you do things that make Sydney's emotionalness more obvious to everyone else, right? So you do it so that it exacerbates it and then let other people draw their own conclusions. But being quiet for seemingly the entire game and then all of a sudden being like, hey, I got an idea, Sydney, it's not going to play well, and it did not play well, and I think it's really just pure boredom. They're winning too much, and this is what happens.
So you're saying you would have liked Erica to just keep it under her hat, maybe target Sydney, but more in an indirect way.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if Sydney's going to be crying every time she can't start a fire or something like that happening, you know, maybe
find reasons for her to build a fire.
Console her in a way that makes it seem like we're going to have to console this person all the time when they can't make a fire. There's ways to do it that point out the thing without you naming the thing. And I think that was a mistake. You're not going to tribal. Why are you doing this?
What do you think, JD? Did she play her hand too fast here?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. I mean, the move here for Erica is to patience. Patience is the key, and just to let Sydney implode. I mean, Sydney's the one that's having these temper tantrums and these outbursts for no reason. I mean, I'm sure it's frustrating not to be able to make fire, but you know, it's day 8 or 9. You'll get it, Sydney. But if you just allow somebody to walk around camp and just rub people the wrong way, I mean,
yes.
Nasir seemed pretty annoyed with her, you know, and that's all you have to do. I mean, Skeets mentioned it on a previous episode where there was a deleted scene where Heather is actually doing exactly what Jason is describing, which is basically subconsciously incepting the rest of the tribe by saying, I had a dream that you were mean to me or whatever it was, you know, or that you stole something. And that subconsciously puts attention onto Sydney. So we already know that Sydney is sort of borderline irritating people at the very least, right? So, and Erica, I think Jason is exactly right, just got bored, or not necessarily bored, but impatient and be like, yeah, let's play the game. I haven't had a chance. She even said in her confessional, I don't even have a torch yet. I don't feel like I'm playing Survivor. So let's get this going. And then there's a flip side of this where, you know, for people who are new to Survivor, it can sometimes be a bit of an advantage not going to tribal councils for so long, because you really don't know where the lines are drawn in the tribe, like who's with whom. You know, sometimes you need that first vote to shake things up and let you know where you stand. And I don't think Erica, obviously she doesn't know where she stands, because she went to the exact wrong person to suggest this.
And having spent so little time with the Luwu tribe, like, we don't necessarily know who's locked in together. Danny and Deshaun have kind of been together since day one. They did the water challenge together, so they seem like they might be tight, but I didn't necessarily know that Sydney was going to be part of their three-person alliance that seems pretty strong on that side. And apparently Erica didn't either, because as soon as she mentioned it, right to Deshaun. But it feels like Deshaun is feeling a little bored as well, because he starts pitching the idea, maybe we should throw this next challenge coming up here. You know, he doesn't have his torch yet either. Maybe the survivor experience feels a little incomplete until you're sitting there with Jeff being grilled on these kind of questions. So they start thinking about, maybe this next one is not so bad if we have to go and vote. You saw how poorly things went during the reward challenge earlier today. Danny, though, is a little bit too conflicted, considering he's led his whole life up to this point trying to win every game he has ever played. Jason, would you ever throw a challenge if you're out there on Survivor?
No. It would have to be the perfect circumstances, but it just so rarely turns out the way you want it to. As we saw last night, it did not turn out the way that they wanted it to, and you risk alienating Jeff, you risk alienating your tribe if it comes out. It's too unpredictable. Just vote somebody out. You know what I mean? Like, just figure out a way to do it, or marshal, you know, your social game and do it that way. But it's too unpredictable. I personally would never throw a challenge.
What about you,
Jay? you said getting on the wrong side of Jeff. I think that would be the number one reason why I wouldn't. I just wouldn't want Dad mad at me. You know what I mean? Like,
Some respect to Jeff.
Exactly. Hanging my head, walking into that tribal council, knowing that he knows that we threw a challenge. And also, I don't have enough confidence. I know me. I would never feel safe enough to actually, you know, throw a challenge and know that, oh yeah, we're just going to throw the challenge, or we're going to vote Erica out, and it's going to be simple as that. I would never have the confidence to do that. And like you say, Trey, this is where we're reaping we're suffering the consequences of all these twists and advantages, where we just have not spent enough time with Luwu. I don't know why Erica would be what, like, I don't know where the lines are drawn. I mean, Erica, she's my homer pick, right? She's from Toronto. Like, I want her to go all the way, but, you know, I just didn't understand why they're so aligned with Sydney and not Erica. And it's just because we haven't spent any time with them.
Yeah, unforced error is the exact right word for it, Jason. Just, you know, throwing out a name when you absolutely didn't need to. And, I mean, to your point, JD, she doesn't know where she stands with her tribe. And as we go to immunity challenge, the idea of throwing the challenge is still hanging in the air. As they walk in, Jeff is rocking some tight rolled sleeves. I don't know if you guys noticed this. But Jeff Probst's pandemic guns were out. It looked like he had been lifting for like 5 months straight. He's like, I am jacking up the shirt on this. He was showing the biceps. Full biceps. We're unsure at this point if Luwu is actually going to go through with trying to throw this challenge. Danny said it was a sin to him to even consider it. But right away they tell us basically, yeah, we're throwing this challenge. And I thought this was great too. Deshaun and Danny narrating how they're trying to throw the challenge while we are watching the challenge. Unfortunately, it does not go to plan for Danny and Deshaun. At one point, Deshaun is, instead of untying the knots on his bag, he was retying the knots on his bag. I don't know. When I was watching that, I was thinking, would I know if somebody was tying knots or untying knots? You know, like, if I'm in my own world, I'm trying to get my knots as untied as quickly as I can. If I see somebody messing with it, I'm not going to be like, hey, those are going the wrong way. But I mean, maybe he's going in, out, I don't know. But I thought this was great. JD, did you like the narration of what they were trying to pull off?
Yeah, I did like it. I was trying to remember if we've seen this before, an actual sort of confessionals happening during an immunity challenge. I'm sure it's happened, but maybe not. It just felt so natural, especially given the circumstances that they were, you know, telling us what they were trying to do while they were doing it. It was great. And again, I will just, point out the Yase tribe who were, you know, patting themselves on the back pretty heavy over there with the turtles, you know.
That's right, they were.
They barely made it through. And
barely.
Yeah, I mean, Evie swimming in the opposite direction was beautiful to see. An underrated part of that is that you could stand. You could, where she was, you could, everybody else was standing. So I didn't understand why she was swimming at all. But wow, it's just.
I think she was influenced by the turtles. She heard the call of the sea as the baby turtles had, and she wanted to join them. She was caught up in the spirit of the circle of life and the generations of turtles coming into the world and fighting for their lives to crawl back to the sea. And that's what she wanted to do. She wanted to join. The wildlife aquatic and swim out to sea. That was so funny.
That was awesome. And that was the first part of the reason why Luvu's plan to throw the challenge didn't work, because Yase was so far behind that they couldn't even throw the early part of the challenge. But eventually, as it happens, Yase kind of catches up and they get to the part of the challenge where you have to push like large wooden logs through a path, a little bit of a chute. It looks tough for, yeah. I don't know, it looks tough for the, not for the blue tribe, because the other tribes are like using their full bodies to push. Yeah. Looked crazy to me. Meanwhile, Danny just using one arm pushing it. He says he's pushing as soft as he can. But unfortunately for Danny and Deshaun, they fucked around and turned Nasir into a straight up challenge beast.
Don't do that.
The guy was dominating. I think he could have completed that entire thing by himself.
If you flip the switch on Nasir, you won't be able to turn him off. It was like, I wanted to put the curbed your enthusiasm theme over that when Danny and Nasir were doing it together. And Danny was just trying to lightly push it. And Nasir is like, 1, 2, 3, boom! And he's just like barbarianing that shit down the chute. And Danny was just like, with each push, Danny is getting more crestfallen and more sad because he realizes there's no way he's going to be able to overcome Nasir beast moding this shit. It was
every like reaction
so
shot of Danny and Deshaun just like completely dumbfounded at what's happening, like watching Evie swim the wrong way or watching how Nasir is pushing these things through, and they're like, this is unbelievable to me how poorly this plan is going.
It is actually a testament to how physically dominant they are that they are out here actually trying to throw it and they can't. They can't fully throw it. And again, I say again, fatal mistake not throwing Heather into the mix and just letting nature take its course. Put her back in the saddle and pitch it to her as, hey, this will be great. You get right back on and prove to people, blah, blah, blah. They should have done that if they wanted to throw it. They needed to do that and they didn't. And that is why they failed to fail.
I loved how almost diplomatic Nasir was about taking over as well, right? Because he just kind of gets in there and he's pushing the logs. But then when they get to the ring toss and Deshaun is just hogging it and he's just shitting the bed on purpose, obviously. But luckily for Nasir, I guess, an errant ring just sort of goes away. It sort of rolls out of the frame, and then Nasir just steps in. Like he doesn't even have to say anything. And then of course Deshaun can't say anything. And it was so, like, there was no ill will, no, like, so politically correct of him. And like he just jumped in and took over and he was the hero of it. And even Deshaun in his confessional is like, I felt really happy for him, even though he completely screwed up our plans, you know. It was great.
It definitely felt like an 80s sports movie sort of beat to it, where you're like, suddenly the 12th man on the team is the best player, and for 12 straight minutes, he's completely unstoppable. And you ask him what happened in the end, he's like, I don't know, I blacked out, and it just happened. But they pull off the win because not only did Evie swim the wrong way, not only did Nasir beast his way through the blocks, when it comes down to the ring toss, it comes down to Ua, the Green Tribe, with JD tossing his rings, and Nasir for the Blue Tribe, Luvu, tossing his rings. They get close. They're both two rings on. The music cuts out. That's when you know this thing is over. JD reaches. He tosses. He yells, money! Cut to the thing. Dunk! And it falls off. The music kicks back in. Nasir takes a toss, and he drains it. This was a Swaggy P moment Survivor. Straight up, arms up, money! Taking the L. Jason, how hard were you laughing when this went down?
Oh, well, first of all, I was just in awe of the edit. You mentioned it. We are so used to, it's so hard for Survivor to throw you off with an edit because we're so used to the rhythms of the challenges, especially when they get down to that, you know, last two contestants, last two tribes. And you know if they hold for a long time on one person, they're about to cut to the winner. And they faked me out. I thought JD was going to drain it. And it was absolutely beautiful to bring the music back. I was crying. JD has spit in the face of the Survivor gods numerous times in his short Survivor lifespan. This being what, calling your shot and missing, giving away an advantage or an idol more than one. Like, just in this episode, he did it twice, and it was. I felt bad for the guy.
Yeah.
But it was delicious. And again, like, big hand to the Survivor editors because this was so well paced. It threw me.
What'd you think, JD?
Yeah, I totally agree. I was faked out as well. I was actually kind of, you know, I'm rooting for Nasir, but the whole cast is likable. But JD, I thought finally he's going to have his Aussie moment, or, you know, he's finally going to come through, and nope. Calls a shot, and you know, and I thought Shan's comment after, may as well have shouted tribal. I mean, it was chef's kiss on the whole thing, like perfectly punctuated. It was something to see for sure.
An iconic moment, calling money, missing it, and then cutting to Shan's legendary confessional where she calls him out for trying to be Allen Iverson in challenges, which I thought was hilarious. If they cut it there, I was like, okay funny
great.
Already. But then when she says, he shouted money, he should have shouted tribal, because that's where we're going. My biggest regret right now is that I'm not playing enough pickup basketball, because guaranteed I would be yelling tribal on game-winning shots that are inevitably bricks. I know I would be the guy. Like, last week I was saying, we need to have more trash talk at challenges. Literally last week, I would be JD, money, and then completely missing it. It was too good.
Can I ask you all something? I was a little confused at the strategy here, so if you get two rings on the same peg, why do you keep going for that peg? There's less space on the surface. Yeah, surface area in the pole for you to hang the ring on. It seemed to me a mistake to not shoot for one of the outside pegs. That's just
totally.
Me.
I agree. And in fact, I thought that they had to. It was insinuated that they had to get it on every peg. I thought when they demonstrated what the challenge was. But yeah, totally agree. The only thing that I would say is maybe, well, I got it on that one. I might as well muscle memory will you know, aim it there again. But very strange strategy, I think.
Yeah, I actually liked Nasir's final make. I thought was kind of interesting because he got it on like the outside peg and it kind of like swoop, slid all the way around. They're like, he fucking buried that shot. That was like a deep bomb from three. Not bad from Nasir. So we go back home with the Ua tribe, and they're talking strategy about who they want to vote out. Jeannie wants to roll her shot in the dark die. Interesting. We might finally get to see this thing played. Exciting. However, JD doesn't want her to play the shot in the dark die because he might be on the chopping block. So he goes and has a little chat with his number one, Shan. They've bonded now. They have completely smoothed over their trust issues. But Shan gives him a crazy pitch, saying, basically giving him the game plan for voting her out, saying, here's what you should be doing. I'm scared you're going to do it. Now give me your extra vote to prove to me you're not going to do that. And he does it. He gave the extra vote to Shan again to lock it in. Jason, at this point, he's already said, you're not getting a second chance. And we just saw him give her a second chance to vote him out with his extra vote. What were you thinking now?
I couldn't believe it. Again, Shades of Eric, Shades of the Black Widows. It was so obviously a bad idea. It's never, if someone wants you to hand over your advantage or idol, it's never good. Ever.
Ever. Ever.
Ever. Ever. Ever. Ever. And I feel like, you know, it's easy to say from the comfort of my home couch that the second someone said that, pitched that to me, I would have said, ah, I understand now that that you are gunning to get me out and I see what is happening here. I get it. But it just, a shock. And honestly, first of all, an iconic Survivor moment. I think it was one of those moments that you're watching it and I was thinking, we'll see this on the compilation reels on YouTube, right? Mm-hmm. This will come up again. This will be a thing that people will reference. People will talk about this. You have entered Survivor lore, JD, in the way that you were specifically trying not to enter Survivor lore. You have done it. And with that came, I honestly feel bad for the guy. I feel bad for him. Yeah, because it's so clear how much he wanted this, how much Survivor means to him, how I think a lot of his gameplay can be chalked up to, I'm trying to impress these people that I'm hanging out with, you know? And I think that it just backfired on him, and I feel bad for him in that sense. It is a classic Survivor moment, though.
He is going to just be haunted by by hearing that song. Because imagine, like, he's not hearing that, obviously, until he watches the episode just like anybody else last night. Shan in her confessional singing the Shantham, her villain anthem. And, I mean, JD's just not going to be able to listen to anybody humming because they go to tribal council very soon after. Shan kicks it off by mentioning that they're all burping and farting on each other and then almost like looks around at everybody so that they have to confess to Jeff that, yeah, we have been burping and farting on each other. She's like, you did, you did, you did. I hear it at night. Don't try and act like you're not farting out there. I was like, this is an interesting start to tribal council. This is not exactly what I'm talking about when I want more tribe life, but I'm glad to hear that there are bodily functions out there.
Yeah, I'm glad it seems like that's healthy. You know, that's healthy. I'd be concerned if it wasn't happening, if people weren't burping and farting. I think then there'd be other issues at play, but it's good to hear that.
Yeah, so Jeannie is very scared at this point. She tells Jeff she's playing from the bottom. She feels like she's going to be getting voted out, and maybe she does want to roll her shot in the dark die. Still waiting to see that played, but JD reassures her, just do what we're supposed to do, and then looks at Shan and Ricard and drops a massive wink.
Is he the perfectly placed wink? He might be the least convincing person ever if he was trying to pitch you on a thing and try to bluff you, because it's, JD, it's not happening. Like, whatever you were telling me to do, I think I'll do the opposite, because I just literally watched you wink at two other people. Very obviously.
Yeah, he's an obvious winker. You saw a lot of Agatha All Along memes last night in the Survivor community. JD, did you think that it was going to be Jeannie? Did you think it was going to be JD at this point?
I 100% thought it was going to be Jeannie. In fact, I felt like Jeff was saying, roll the dice, do it, roll it. Like, he was almost trying to convince her to do it, probably because he just wants to see it happen on the show. But Jeannie's fear, anxiety was palpable. I was kind of shocked that that Shen turned on JD, I guess, because, you know, he will literally do anything that she tells him to do. So, you know, why get rid of that? But then again, Jeannie now is in her back pocket, and I'm sure feels grateful. And, you know, JD is... he is so aware that he is on the show of Survivor. And
true.
I find that, don't get me wrong, I love the guy, but I find that a lot of the times that he's talking one-on-one to people, or even in his confessional or in any situation, he is so aware that he's on TV, and a lot of what he says comes off as disingenuous a lot of the time. The only time of real humility we saw was when he actually got busted with his vote sticking out of his pants. And I think that was ultimately his
that
downfall.
Dangling.
I mean, that wink.
I think you're totally right. I was reading his exit interview today, and they asked him basically, like, how did you feel about how you played the game? And within the first two lines of his answer was, well, I got a lot of screen time, so it went great from that standpoint. So I kind of feel like you're right. He was out there to make a name for himself, and he certainly did, because they go to tally the votes. Jeff comes back, one for Jeannie, and the next three for JD. He stands up, crushed, blindsided. Any particular reason? ooh, a tough way to go out. They just hit him with, I love you. See you later, JD. Jason, do you think this was the right choice, getting rid of JD over Jeannie? Because it could have gone either way when they were coming into
Yeah,
tribal.
It could have gone either way. But ultimately, I think that you could certainly make the case that, okay, JD is a meat shield. Keep him around. But I feel like Jeannie 1 is so isolated that I'll take my chances with her, who's kind of proven to not be able to, one, read people accurately, and two, build the bridges that she needs to be able to move forward, and three, is kind of beholden to us now. She kind of needs us. And as we go forward with numbers, you know, certainly... if I'm Shan, I'm thinking Jeannie's number one target is Ricard, not me. Ricard is the one who can't stop bringing up the vote. He's sure. always mm-hmm. talking about it. He's made it clear that it's a hair in the ointment for him. And so if I'm Jeannie, maybe I'm going for him first. And, you know, furthermore, I just kind of feel like if you give your advantage to someone twice, you deserve to go home. No ifs, ands, or buts. No matter what the strategy is, time to go. You can't play like that. You gotta go. And so I do think it was the right decision, although obviously I think you can make arguments either way.
Yeah, once JD gave the vote for the second time, it was like, Shan had to be thinking, it's not coming a third time. Like, I mean, come on, it's not gonna happen a third time. What do you think, JD? Was this the right choice, booting JD over Jeannie?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, he comes across as very disingenuous, but on the absolute flip side, when Jeannie she started choking up when she was talking, when she thought she was getting voted out, and she was talking about the what she would miss most on the island, and she actually started crying, I bought that 100%. So obviously there is a bond there, at least from from Jeannie's perspective, you know. So I think that the three of them, if they can stay together going into a merge, can be a very powerful trio. Because JD has, I feel like he would abandon them immediately during for a merge.
You think he's more likely to flip than Jeannie would be?
Oh, absolutely. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, JD is obviously he thought he was tight with Shan. You know, he was willing to do whatever. Whereas Jeannie and Ricard, obviously they have a beef. I don't know. This threesome to me doesn't seem like they're going to last very long together through the merge, whether it be Jeannie flipping because she's been on the bottom with these two the whole time, or Shan and Ricard kind of looking at each other and saying, I can't win if this is the person next to me because we've been together for the whole time. I think Ricard would certainly say that, and he seems like a guy who would be ready to flip. But I guess we shall see soon. The other question I got for you, JD, as soon as he's voted out, he has a nice confessional or his post-vote off. He's very bummed, but he's happy to have played the game of Survivor, very excited. And at least his hair looked good, which, you know, I thought it did. I thought he looked very cool.
Absolutely.
Do you want to see JD back sometime? Because I think he'll be back.
Oh, yeah. If they do a second chances type of season, absolutely. I mean, if anyone deserves a second chance, it's him. I would love to see a reinvented JD, somebody who's learned from all of the mistakes. And, pound for pound, probably the most mistakes made, maybe, out of a contestant.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. There's been some doozies, absolutely, but just like his inability to really shine at challenges, his giving away not one but two advantages to the same person, he's up there for somebody who is just ripe for redemption. You know, go out, live a few years out in the real world, come back, and he would just be chomping at the bit. I think it would be television gold. So absolutely bring him back, Jeff.
Yeah, I agree.
The player he reminds me so much of is actually Coach, where I'm like, he's talking a big game and, you know, like he has all of these stories and all this stuff that he thinks is really cool. And then like he kind of doesn't do much in challenges and comes up a little bit short here and there, but he's always talking a big game. And Coach has been great like every time that he's been on. So I would love to see him come back. What about you, Jason? You want to see JD again?
I'd love to see him come back. He reminded me of Spencer from Second Chances and I'm forgetting what his first season was, both with Cass, with Chaos Cass.
Brain, Brawn, and
Brain, yeah, that was
Ballers.
It.
That's it, yeah.
Because he came in, much like JD, very confident in his own intellect and in his own knowledge of the show, and then quickly found himself trucked by events, and then I think really learned from those things and came back and was a real player in Second Chance, where he realized, okay, I've got to build bonds with people. I can't just be out here acting like I'm the smartest, because that's no way to play the game. I'm not going to be able to move forward if I don't have true allies, and if not trying to work out situations that work both for me and the ally that I'm working with. And so I think that JD, if he gets in the lab, gets in that film room, scrubs this tape, I think he can come back and be a real player.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Just got to put in the reps a few times. Give it 5 years. Come back with a little bit of perspective 5 years later. The other question that I got for y'all, where do you put this on the all-time rankings? I mean, you don't have to rank them. Where do you, like, kind of put this as a level of botches, right? Like you've mentioned, Jason, this is very similar to the Black Widow Brigade getting Eric to give up his immunity necklace and then voting him out. The stakes were a lot higher at this point. You know, we're like 4 episodes in here. So does that factor into your ranking at all?
It does, because you have the benefit of having seen all those things. Like, it was not a gaffe in the same magnitude as Eric and some of those other things, but you just should know better.
Yeah,
you should know better. Yeah. It's certainly one of the worst in recent memory and in recent seasons. Because, listen, again, as a student of the game, don't give it up. Don't give it up. I think of Ty resisting Culpepper when Culpepper was like, you will give it to me. And he didn't, because he understands the game and did refuse to do it, and then successfully flipped that on Brad. Like, hey, you're bullying me into giving up my thing. Like, there's ways to do it. There were moves to be made, and he didn't take any of those moves, and it was a bad, bad mistake. Should have known better.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of comparisons for him to Tyson as well, voting himself out early in the game and then, you know, eventually coming back and kind of putting his place in the names of the Survivor Legends. Eventually, we're going to be putting our names into the books of Survivor Legends as well. But first, we're going to take a quick break and answer some questions when we come back.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Back with No Buffs. Gonna read some tree mail here. Got a few questions. Y'all have been so good sending them in. Tweet them to us at NoDunksEat. Or email us, nodunks@theathletic.com. Throw No Buffs in the headline or the subject line, whatever you call that thing emails, right? Whatever they are, send it in to us. We'll answer it. Our first one. Hey, y'all. I agree with you guys that breaking the fourth wall thing isn't really working this season. Is there something along those lines that you would like to see, though? I wouldn't mind seeing Jeff be briefed by the producers ahead of Tribal Council to see how they decide what they're going to focus on based on the info they have. Cheers, Steve. P.S. As an Australian, I know I definitely didn't pull off that y'all. I don't think I've ever heard Lee Ellis say y'all now that you're mentioning it, Steve, but y'all's more of a state of mind, and I think it was good. So what do you guys think? Is there anything you would like to see along the lines of the behind-the-scenes stuff? Because we didn't get any fourth wall breaking, I don't think, from Jeff in this episode. J.D., I'll start with you. Is there anything along those lines you'd like to see?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of joked about it. Well, I was joking about it before, in that I wanted to see Jeff in a sort of Plutarch Heavensby role in the game makers sort of control room, completely removed from the island. But I think I kind of would like to see that. I watched the first episode of Jon Stewart's new show and the first cold open. I don't know if he does this every time. But it's the writer's room, basically, and they're sitting around and just pitching ideas of what they could do. I don't think that's a bad idea for Survivor. I would love to see that in like a tent, in a MASH-style tent, you know, with a whiteboard just throwing stuff up against the wall. Mike White in the corner. Is it fun? Is it fun? You know, with that being the mantra. I mean, they're going to show us behind the scenes, let's see some behind the scenes. I mean, I hate to see anybody injured on the show, but I always love it when Dr. Joe shows up, right? Right. But you do get to see a little bit, a peek behind the curtain, you know, the boats coming in and the helicopters and drones and stuff. I mean, as a production geek, I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think if they're going to go for it, just go for it. My other pitch to Jeff, and this is super cheesy, but, you know, if he's going to address us, do it from his living room, like fireside chat, you know, like as he's watching the show with us, you know, it's like, I remember this. I mean, they do it on the finale or, you know, every time he's like, oh, watch this thing that's coming up. It's going to blow your mind or whatever. So that kind of thing, I think, would be kind of cool. I mean, like, take the big swings. You might as well.
What about you, Jason? You like the idea of a TMZ style pitch meeting for the Survivor Tribal Council?
That is not so much for me. The thing that I have always wanted from Survivor, and because I feel that the show is leaving a lot of content on the table, is something like, as a former Big Brother fan, something like the Big Brother After Dark material that they would have. I believe it was on Showtime, and now they have it somewhere else, but they would open the feeds for like 3 hours and just kind of, you know, flip through what was going on in the house, even if it's just people like hanging out in the pool and not saying anything, just so you could just kind of flip through and catch the vibe and see what's going on. I think something like that, obviously more curated, but just something to give us a feel for what downtime on the island is like. I would crave that. I would really like something like that. Of course, the Ponderosa stuff is already out there if you want to go look for it, but something that just gives you a feel for, you know, what an average afternoon on the island is after a challenge, yeah, or when a challenge is in 2 days and you're just kind of sitting around, what are you talking about? What are they doing? I think the fan base would eat that up. I know I would certainly watch it.
Yeah, definitely. It builds such a connection to the characters.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I would 100% watch a full hour of Ponderosa, like in a Big Brother style, hanging out at Ponderosa with the people who were voted off. You know, I love the Ponderosa segments that we get after the merge. Just hanging out with the people voted out. They arrive. There's all, you know, one person just keeps showing up every episode. And it's just like, they're filthy. They're like, oh, it's JT.
You're so dirty. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love that stuff.
I'm with Heidi. Give us some 2 hour episodes. Absolutely. Come on, Jeff. We got enough content for it. 1 hour a week. Not nearly enough. We got one more question. This one came from Javante Music early on, but it can be hard to keep track of these YouTube comments. So here's the question from Javante. Would you make it to the merge? I'd like to think I would, but I don't know. You gotta make it to the merge to be a real Survivor player, though I will say, Beef Walton, we're gonna remember him. JD, we're gonna remember him. Neither of them made the merge. Jason, you think you'd make the merge if you were on Survivor?
Listen, luck is a huge part of this. Who you're on a tribe with, what happens with that tribe, a lot of that is out of your control, but I feel like I could make the merge. I feel like I could do it.
Yeah.
I'll say that with my full chest. Yeah. I could make
the merge. I think I could make the merge, maybe. You got to have a little bit more confidence, man. Come on. You would win some people over there. You only got to, I don't know, how many votes you maybe got to go through? 3 votes? You can get by on 3 votes, I think.
I think I could do it.
Yeah, you're a charming guy. JD, I think I'd be a little bit more worried for you, no offense. You think you can make it to the merge?
Dare you? Well,
I'm just messing with you.
I think that I'm either voted off first or I'm going deep. Like, I think it's one or the other. If I can make it through that first tribal council, I think I'll be all right. And really what I think it's going to be is if I can last for 2 days and I get sort of acclimated to the hunger, to the bugs and all of that stuff. If I could just make that first 48 hours, then I think I'd be fine, because then I can, play the diplomatic game. So I think I could make it to the merge if I made it past that first vote.
Oh, that first vote would be so nerve-wracking. I'm sure that's why some of the Luvu tribe is like, we haven't even really started yet. Haven't had to have those nerves of actually writing a name down. But we appreciate your questions. Keep them coming in at No Dunks Inc., nodunks@theathletic.com. Shoot us an email. Let's take a look ahead at next week's Survivor. Got a couple of little interesting things that look like they will probably actually play out come next episode. Genie finds the Beware advantage, according to next week's tease, which I think must be Beef Walton's, which was replanted. And also, Yasa searches through Xander's bag. I went through the game within a game this week to make sure I know what's going on for next week, and we're getting some bag searching. Do you think that that's a cool thing? Would you search through somebody's bag, Jason?
On Survivor? I might.
Yeah.
I might. You have to prepare. You have to do it. You can't just go it alone and search it. It has to be a thing where somebody says we should search their bag and then you kind of come to an agreement. You have to be complicit with other people in that because it will gain you a reputation. But in the right circumstances, I'd search someone's bag for sure.
I'm curious what they're searching for because I remember, Evie knows everything already, right? She already knows about the two advantages that he has. So is it possible that he has found another, a third advantage? That would be crazy. But
must be a Tiffany-led plan, because remember how paranoid she was about him maybe actually being able to play something during the Voce vote. So she's probably still got the idea in her mind. He's got some other advantage that we're going to need to find out. The other question Jeff had, JD, is if you found an advantage, if you found an immunity idol, would you put it in your bag or would you hide it somewhere? So let's say you found something. What are you doing with that very valuable piece of whatever that you don't want anybody else to know about?
Oh, it's going in my ass. 100%. Right up there. Now, I think the old prison wallet. I think I would actually put it in my bag because I wouldn't trust myself. I don't think I would. I think I'd lose it. I think I would be like, I don't know, where did I bury this thing? And that would go down as a, you know, all-timer. Has anyone ever
just
done
bury
that?
It?
Like, bury it and lose it? I mean,
bury it and forget about it. Wow, that would be funny. Somebody finds it like three seasons later.
Yeah.
This is it? No, this is Brad's. What about Jason? What are you doing with your hidden thing? How are you hiding it?
I might bend it and put it in my boot. I've been walking around with this in my boot all day.
There you go.
But it's definitely not in the bag, because as we've seen on Survivor, the bags are free for people to rifle through. Mm. And at some point, you're going to forget it. And you can't take it everywhere, because that looks like a suspicious person taking their bag everywhere. So I'd probably either stick it in my shoe, in my prison wallet, or most likely I would bury it someplace.
Man, that's a great point about the boots, because honestly, like, I think about all the time, literally all the time when I'm watching Survivor, what would I wear? What would I want to wear when I'm out there? And one of the questions is, like, shoes. Like, I don't know, Xander's been wearing, like, off-white Nikes. I remember Rodney had a pair of, like, Coke white Air Jordan 1s that he played in. Sneakers to me don't seem like the greatest idea, but man, a boot that you can hide something in, that's actually like a valuable piece of clothing. I think that's a pretty smart idea.
Well, totally. But you don't really, I mean, it's your wardrobe, but you send a whole bunch of stuff and they pick it for you, right? So, I mean, you only send cowboy boots. That's it. Like, here are my 8 pairs of boots.
I just love cowboy just boots. Everything with
false bottom with, like, false heels that flip down. There's, like, a little thing in there. Right now, I can't stop thinking about Probst saying, all right, if anybody has an advantage, now is the time to do it. And then JD standing up and going, yeah, I got something. Hold on.
It's going to be a minute.
It's going to be a second. Hold on. And then just like,
don't look at me. Don't
crouching
look at
there
me.
Like this while the Survivor music is pumping and everybody's like. And then Jeff taking it and then being like, this is.
Could go poorly, though. You could end up being the worst evacuation since Bruce ate too much.
That is very
JD
true.
Had to be evacuated. Why? Too many steaks? No, he shoved his immunity idol up his ass. You know, too many beans, it turned out. Anyways, we've got a great episode coming up next week. I think we're all in agreement when Shan, player of the episode, seems to be driving. How about on the other tribes? Who do you like from the yellow tribe? Who do you like from the blue tribe? JD, I'll start with you.
Well, yellow is Xander. I will say that Tiffany is really growing on me. I do feel bad for. I kind of dunked on her, like I said, but she seems to be coming into her own, and she's just growing on me. And she's likable, really, really likable. Yeah. And also, well, this is. I'm literally. What about this guy? What about that guy? Leanna. Destroyed that the reward challenge. So a lot of likable people, but I still think that if Xander can just get that immunity activated, I think he's unstoppable in this game. So Xander, then blue. It seems like Deshaun is the guy that's calling the shots over there. I mean, so we'll see
who you think's driving. Jason.
Well, obviously, Shan is kind of running the game right now. And then from Yellow Tribe, I agree with JD, special consideration for Leanna, who absolutely crushed that challenge. That was like a whoa moment. Let's turn her loose and let her get loose in those challenges. That was super, super impressive. I could see Tiffany going home sometime soon from that tribe. It's just a lot to deal with, and I don't know if you can necessarily predict what she'll do next. And then Blue Tribe, you know, I thought Danny's moment with Heather was both a great human moment that let you know that this is a nice, cool guy who's not just crushing it at challenges and one of the best physical, you know, most impressive physical threats currently in the game and maybe in the game in recent memory, but also like that was a great game move. That is a move that will stick in people's minds. So I think that's a move that says, here's a person maybe I could work with and if things shake out the right way. So I was really impressed with him this week.
Yeah, I thought it was a great episode for Danny. Not only did he have the bonding moment with Heather after she failed, like you're saying, which was great, but I think even kind of going against his personal instinct and being willing to throw the challenge, like, I mean, Deshaun's got to trust him 100% if he doesn't already. Like, the guy's going to do what he can to improve where he's standing in the tribe. And I feel like sometimes with the professional athletes, they just want to get by on the physical stuff. And that, to me, seems like Danny has realize like, yeah, I'm going to be the best physical guy out here, but I got to play the rest of the game as well. So I thought a great episode for him.
100%.
But we will be back tomorrow with some basketball content on No Dunks. Go and check that out. Part 5 of our NBA season preview. What you got coming up, Jason?
Well, mostly that the Knicks are back. It's a thing. Again, I know I mentioned it last episode. People have been talking about it. They've been saying the Knicks are back. You walk around the streets and you can hear that people actually saying it. The Knicks are back. So that's what I've got going on. The Knicks are back. And I've just been thinking about it and talking about it with people as you do.
October 28th, Bulls versus Knicks. That's 2 weeks from today. We might just have to
go straight from
stream to stream here. Streaming like crazy. But thank you to everybody on the live tribe who joined us here on YouTube. Thanks to everybody who subscribes. Get your reviews in. Send us some emails. Send us some tweets. Like I said, No Dunks is back tomorrow. No Buffs is back next Thursday. Until then, the tribe has spoken.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.